All right, so we're holding on Lamed Vav Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. Mishnah said that a case where one person is mudr hana from another, he's not allowed to have hana from him. Nevertheless, the person he's also to have hana from, melamde medrash halachas v'agadis, he's allowed to teach him, the person who's also to have hana from him, he's allowed to teach him medrash and halachas and agadis. And we discussed that medrash, but not avaloy mikra, avaloy lamdenu mikra, but he can't teach him chumash or tanach. So again, we said medrash means when the chachamim darshan psukim to learn halachas. Halachas means halachas l'moshe misinai that don't have a source in chumash. And agados means things that the chachamim asmatas basically dinim that the chachamim that were misakin or goizer or darshan or whatever and use a pasuk as an asmata rather than as an actual source for it. Okay, mikra my time aloy lamden. The Gemara asks why takasher can't he teach him tanach? L'chorim shouldn't become hanilei, presumably because he's giving him hana. Namely, let's assume that the teacher should be paid for teaching chumash. So if he foregoes that payment, then he's giving the guy hana. Wait a few lines. Well, then in that case, medrash nami kom hanilei. Shouldn't it be the same thing with medrash for the same reason? L'chorim, if you can be paid for mikra, you can be paid for medrash. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel says, you're right, we're talking about Makam, Shenoitin Schar La Mikra, Veinoitin Schar La Medrash. Fine, our Mishnah is talking about the kind of place where you get paid for teaching Tanakh, but you do not get paid for teaching Torah Shabbat Peh. Okay, the question is, my Pesukah, what's the definitive statement? How can the Mishnah just say a definitive thing? You can teach him Torah Shabbat Peh, but you can't teach him Torah Shabbat Chsav, as though it's a given that you're going to get paid for one and not for the other. If it just depends on the minhag of different places, then you could have some places might be the other way around. You get paid for Torah Shabbat Peh, you don't get paid for Torah Shabbat Chsav. The answer is no. Hakamash Malon. This is actually what Shmuel is telling us. Da'afilu b'makam shenoytlin schar ala mikra. Even in places where a teacher gets paid, ala mikra shari la mishkal, he's allowed to get paid for teaching mikra, ala medrash lo shari la mishkal, and on medrash he's not. So that by the Mishnah telling us this, that you can't teach mikra, but you could teach medrash, the Mishnah is in effect telling us that there can be places where nobody gets paid at all, where they're machmir on themselves, you don't get paid at all. In that case, then you would be allowed to teach mikra because then there's no hana involved by foregoing the payment because you're anyway not going to. It's a minhag makom that you don't get paid. But even in a place where they have a minhag to pay, a person is not allowed to accept payment for Torah Shabbat Peh, for medrash halachos and agadas. And that's the point the Mishnah is making, that by saying that he's also to teach a mikra means that depending on the circumstances, or may or may not be also depending whether payment is paid for mikra in this place. But medrash, he's always going to be able to teach him because medrash, you never allow the charge for.
Medrash means?
Medrash, Torah Shabbat Peh in general. Yeah. So, Maishna medrash deloy. So, what's the difference why you can't get paid for teaching medrash, Torah Shabbat Peh? Because the pasuk says, this is what you just quoted, Yaakov. Moshe Rabbeinu says, the Eibishter commanded me at that time to teach you. And then it says, look, I've taught you chukim and reshbatim, as Hashem commanded me, which implies, ma'ani b'chinam, achatem nami b'chinam, which implies, just like I do it for free, so you should do it for free. There's a couple of different possibilities, how exactly we learn that from the pasuk. The Ran explains like this.
Ma'ani, Moshe Rabbeinu?
Yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu. The Ran explains like this. It can't be that Moshe is saying Hashem commanded me to teach you with pay, and therefore you can teach with pay, because Hashem doesn't command a person to teach with pay. If you want to teach for free, you're certainly entitled to. And furthermore, it can't mean that Moshe is just informing the people, you should know I'm teaching you as Hashem commanded me, like otherwise you would think I'm making up the mitzvahs myself. They didn't think he's making up the mitzvahs himself. Vayaminu b'Hashem of Moshe Avdei. Gam b'chol yaminu l'olam, actually, the pasuk of the Ran quotes. Before Matan Torah, the Mishnah says, they'll believe in you forever. Once they say, as the Rambam writes, you know, where when it came to all the oisos and moves, and when it came to the makas and everything, fine, people could still think maybe it was done by magic, like trickery or whatever. When they all saw with their eyes that the Eibishter gave the Torah on Har Sinai, that the Eved is calling out Moshe, tell them this mitzvah, and he tells them this mitzvah, then at that point they knew from then on everything that Moshe says is told by the Eved. So Moshe doesn't have to tell them Kashet, Sivani, Hashem Alekoi, just to inform them you should know the mitzvahs that I'm telling you come from Hashem. Necessarily, therefore, it must mean that he's saying that the Ebishter commanded me to teach you for free, and therefore you should also be teaching. The Rosh puts it a little bit differently. He says that the vote is Hashem taught me for free. Therefore, Hashem taught me that I should be. Therefore, Hashem told me I should return the favor to you and teach you for free. A couple of Mepharshim also talk about the idea that Moshe wouldn't have had the charge for teaching anyway. We're going to learn later on. We're going to learn tomorrow on Daf Lamed Chet that Moshe was actually rich. He became rich from the psoilus of the leftover chips of sapphire from the lufas. So therefore he wouldn't have had to charge them anyway. So I'm teaching you for free because I don't need the charge. So therefore you also teach for free.
Hey, how about you teaching us for free also?
Indeed. Well, then the question becomes. Mikra Nami Bechinam. Well, then isn't it the case? Shouldn't that same thing be true also as far as Tanakh? Kashet Sivani Hashem Alekoi. The Chora includes everything. It includes Chumash just as much as Tarshu Bal Peh.
At that point, what do they have besides mitzvah?
No, every time Moshe taught them a mitzvah, he taught them the Tarshu Bal Peh that goes with it. You know, I mean, how do you have a shchita? You know, there's a vakta kasher tzivitzicha, right? You know, that you had to teach them the halachos of shchita, which aren't written anywhere in Tanakh. Same thing with all the other mitzvahs. The Rambam writes explicitly that in Akdama to Yad HaZaka. The Rambam explains that every time Moshe was given a mitzvah, he would go and he'd teach the Jewish people the pasuk that says the mitzvah, that expresses the mitzvah, and all the details that we know from Tarshu Bal Peh. Comes to Dalet Minim, the details, what are the Dalet Minim, what are Kasher, what are Pasul, etc., and same with Tefillin, same with all the mitzvahs. Okay, so what's the difference? If L'chora, if you have to teach Torah Shabbat Peh for free, then you have to teach Torah Shabbat Sal for free. Why are we saying that you are allowed to take payment for that? The answer is, there's a difference. What age are you usually teaching Mikra? We know from Pirkei Avos, Ben Chomesh Shanim L'Mikra, Ben Esther Shanim L'Mishnah. So a five-year-old is first started between 5 and 10 is when you're learning Chumash. Actually, the way the Alter Rebbe explains it in Shulchan Aruch is during the child's fifth year, you start teaching him how to read Ivra, and then beginning at five, they start learning Tanakh and they learn it exclusively until they're 10, and then they start on Mishnah, which is already Tereshu Bal Peh. So therefore, Rav Amos Chashimur. So Rav says you're right. Taka can't be charging. For teaching Torah Shabbat Sav in and of itself, because that would be the same thing, Kashet Sivani Hashem Alekai, but you're watching the kids. the teacher is also babysitting them after all to make sure that they don't run around and cause damage and whatever. Rabbi Yechanan Amos Chab Pisuk Taimim. Rabbi Yechanan gives a different reason. You're not just teaching them the words of Tanakh. You're also the teacher is also teaching these kids the Torah. Now, so what do we mean? Does Rabbi Yechanan mean that there's two possibilities? Some Mepharshim explain that Rabbi Yechanan means that actually the Trup, the Rosh, for example, writes over here, the Trup are not Daraita. And there are indeed various Rishonim and Achronim who say, based on this and based on some other sources as well, that maybe the Trup were not originally given L'moshe Mitzrayim, but rather they were introduced later on by Ezra and the Anshei Knesset Gadolah. Originally there would have been, you have to understand the psukim, but you don't necessarily need a fixed system of tshuva for that. And later on, they actually said that they were misakin. On the other hand, the Zohar, for example,
so many different
minhagim. There's different minhagim of how to sing them, but everybody has the same tshuva. No. Okay, that's a different question. I was going to say the Zohar talks about that the nekudmas and tshuva are all the Moshe Mitzrayim. And now, the symbols that we use for the tshuva were only first written down in the time of the Goyim by the Baal HaMasor 1,000-odd years ago. Some people want to say that they actually, for example, Rabbi Eliyahu Bacher, one of the early writers on the Masor about 500 years ago, writes that the Baal HaMasor from Jerry actually invented these signs that before their time there were no standardized signs for the Torah. On the other hand, based on that Zohar, it seems not so. It could be according to the Zohar that they were the signs for the Torah existed Bal Peh, either from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu or according to other people from the time of Ezra, and the Baal HaMasor are the first ones to actually write it down in the symbols that we're familiar with, etc. So we learned in Brachas, actually, that the Gemara had mentioned over there that the right hand you use in the Pesha Marav Bapayim HaTorah. And Rashi explains over there what a person is laying, like he motioned with his hand according to the signs of the Torah. He said he saw people from Eretz Yisrael do that. Anyway, so one way of looking at it, what Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here is he's saying Pisuk Taimim is actually not Deraita. It's something instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Another way of looking at it is no, he agrees that they do in fact exist Deraita. But the fact of the matter is, in order to be Yotze reading from the Torah, in order to do the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, you don't necessarily have to read the Pesukim with Torah. If you say the Pesukim without Torah, you're also Yotze the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So he might mean that. When the Malamed teaches the kids the Torah, it is something Deraita, but it's not something that they have to be doing in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. They could be Yotze Ben Chomesh Shana Mikra just by reading the words and with the Nekudot, but without the Torah. The Mishnah doesn't like it. Fine, but that doesn't mean you're not Yotze. Okay.
So the
Anshei
Knesset HaGedolah, they make one set of Torah.
No, so again, so there's two ways of understanding. One is that the Torah go back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and then they weren't written down, they were part of Torah Sheval Peh. And what do we mean over here when Rav Yochanan says, he just means that you don't have to read the words of Chumash or Tanakh with Torah in order to be Yotze the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Or the other way of looking at it is the Torah were in fact first, the system of Torah was first invented by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And then within that also you have Rav Eliezer Bacher's opinion that they came up with the Torah, but not with the graphical representations of them, not with the symbols that we find printed in the Chumashim, but that came from the Baalei HaMasora. You're asking about the different minhagim. Fine, there's different minhagim and lots of things, but everybody has the same basic Torah. It's how musically, how you realize a kadma or a zauka or a segel or whatever is different in different ages, but it's still the same underlying concept. It's sort of like you have 100 people sing a tune, they'll sing it slightly, they'll sing it 100 different ways.
But the Talmud
reads
it's either a
mechaber
or a mafsik.
Right.
One or the other.
Yeah.
That could go well when you say
pisuk. Yeah, pisuk, because you're dividing that part of the right. We'll learn on Amud Beis more about that.
Mechaber
and mafsik. The terup that separate one word from the next syntactically. They're the equivalent of commas or semicolons or what have you. And you have terup that join two words together, that say that this word syntactically is joined together with the next word. Whatever, this isn't really the place to get into it, but that is how it is. One of the functions of the Torah, the sides of the Torah, tell us how to sing the Pesukim. They also tell us how to divide, how to diagram the sentences, basically. So, Tanan, so let's consider, our Mishnah said, Lo Yolam Dena Mikra, that somebody you're also Tanah from, cannot teach you Mikra, cannot teach you Tanakh. So, Bishlam Lamanda Amas Chav Pisuk Taimim. So, okay, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that you'd be allowed to charge for Pisuk Taimim, and the Loya Lamdenu. Well, then we understand. Why can you not teach somebody? Why can you not teach in that case? Because if you were going to teach, you would be entitled to charge for Pisuk Taimim. And like this, you might be Moichel on it, but if you're Moichel on it, you can't be, because then the other guy's going to have Hanal from you, so therefore that creates a problem. Ella, Lamanda Amas Chav Shimur. But according to the opinion, that the reason why a Malamed can charge for teaching Torah Shabbat Chav is because he's watching the kids at that time, Godo Bar Shimuru. We're talking the Pashtus, we're talking about an adult who's Mudr Hanah from you. An adult doesn't have to be watched. So according to Rav, why should there be a problem teaching Mikra? You can't charge for teaching Mikra anyway. The answer is the cotton katani. Okay, you have to say that our Mishnah is talking about a cotton. Namely, we're talking about, in other words, that the one who's also in Hana from you is a cotton. Now, of course, the question is, does a cotton b'chlal? I mean, we've learned before that he's not really chayev in mitzvahs. So how would he be chayev in this anyway? So the Ran says that the fact of the matter is, even if a cotton is allowed to do isurim on his own, you're still not allowed to give him a dvar isur. We talked about yesterday in the case of the cotton pesach, but that's different. The Torah itself allows it as a matter of chinuch, but you can't give him something which would be osis. So we learned about this in Yuvamos. We learned about this in the next to last parak of Yuvamos, that if a child is eating nevelos, Beis Din does not have an obligation to prevent him from doing that. But basically, anybody else other than his father. But nobody can actually give him a piece of tshepes and tell him, go ahead and eat it. Same thing over here. If you were to teach this child who's mudr hanaa from you, you would actually be giving him and waiving the fee that you would be entitled to, according to Rav, for shimur, for watching him, then you would be giving him hanaa, which is also.
What if you
offer
your hanaa on him?
Either that, or, okay, so the other possibility is, it could be that the katan made the neder, which in that case, the question is, do katan, do katanim, do nedarim? And the answer is, that we're going to learn later on in the sechta, the concept of mufla ha-samach le-ish, that a child, during the 1 year before their bar bat mitzvah, if they know who they're addressing, they know that they're addressing the Eivishter when they're making a neder, then yes, that neder is chal. So therefore, yes, you can have a 12-year-old boy or an 11-year-old girl who makes a neder of hana, and in fact, it's chal. Yeah, if they understand.
Or you made a neder for the boy should not get hana from him.
That's also possible, right?
Now
that's the thing. If he teaches it, so that's the thing. According to Rav, that's the thing. So whichever way we look at it, according to Rav, you would say that you're entitled, that the Melamed is entitled to payment for Shimur, for watching the child while he's teaching him, and therefore if he waives it, then that's giving him Hana. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, he could be, even forgetting about Shimur, he could be charging for Pesach Taimim, regardless for whether he's teaching a child or an adult. And if he waives his fee for Pesach Taimim, then that's giving Hana. Well, that would be a problem. That's the thing. We're saying that, according to the Ran, what we're saying is, even though the child himself is not technically, if he's below the age of Mufla, he's not technically Chayev in the Dorim, nevertheless, you're not allowed to give him something which is also to him. The adult would be, the teacher would be calling him the Yisr. Mind you, by the way, Mefarshim say, we talked about in the first parak, or early in the second parak, we talked about a machlok between the Rambam and the Ran, if one person afters somebody else to have hana from something, and then they give it to him, who's chayev on lo yachal dvarai, who's chayev for actually breaking the neder, the one who offered it or the one who actually ate it? We talked about the connection there with the husband and wife. No, so we said the Rambam said that the husband would be the one who gets malchus, the Rambam says the wife is the one who gets malchus. Similarly over here, Mefarshim say, this is maybe where the Rambam got his shitta from. We're talking about over here the Melamed giving the hana to the child, and we're saying that it would be also for him to do that. So you see, he'd be the one who'd be considered to be breaking the neder. Question is, Iba Cotton, Ama Sefer, well, you're saying it's talking about a cotton? Fine, but look at the end of the Mishnah, Avam Lamed is Bonav. The Mishnah continues that you can't teach the Mudr Hanah himself, but you can teach his children. Avam Lamed is Bonav Mikra. Cotton by Bonim, who? A cotton himself can't have children. The answer is Chasurim Nechsira. You have to say that the Mishnah is missing words. V'hafi Katani. It means like this. Loyal Amdenu Mikra. He's not allowed to teach him Mikra, namely Bikotan, if it's a cotton, according to Rav, because with a cotton you'd have Chav Shimur, and which you're entitled to, and if you waive it, then you have a problem. But Imhaya Godom Lamde Loyal Amdenu Mikra. But if he's an adult, then you can teach him together with his children Mikra. Because you're allowed to teach him, because then according to Rav, there's no schar shimur. You're not entitled. In that case, if you're teaching an adult, you're not allowed to charge for mikra taka, because there's no schar shimur involved. The adult isn't going to run out on you, and therefore, once you're teaching him, you can also be teaching his children. So there's no extra shimur or no extra na involved or no extra schar involved.
Once you're teaching the adult,
you can teach his children with him, because you're not entitled to schar shimur then. You're entitled to schar shimur if he's teaching a classroom full of kids or an individual kid or whatever who might run out. But if he's teaching the father together with his children, there's no schar shimur, because the father is going to watch his children and make sure they don't run out. Yeah. So no proof from our Mishnah whether in favor of Rav or in favor of Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. Incidentally, by the way, before we go further, there is a big question. So, Taka, how do Melamdim get paid nowadays? There's a couple of possibilities. One of them is based on the Schar Shimur idea. The Ran argues that really, when you have a machlokes between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. So really then, so first of all, there is this. First of all, given Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that you can charge Pesach Taimim, so fine, if you're teaching the kids with chirup, then you're allowed to collect payment for that anyway, because already chirup is part of it, either because we said it's not d'oraisa, or because it's d'oraisa, but it's not an absolute requirement in order to learn Torah. That's one possibility. The other thing is, teacher can charge for schar batala, for the fact that he could have had a job otherwise. And then there are various Rishonim and Acharonim who say that also a teacher is entitled to be paid, first of all, if he doesn't have any other way of making a living, because otherwise how are you going to have Malamdim for kids? But they talk about it as a matter of a slash slashet, and a similar idea. So the Rambam writes very strongly against people, against kolo yungalites who learn Torah and get paid money for it. But yet nowadays, you know, for hundreds of years, it's been a commonplace thing that they do that, because if you didn't, then nobody would learn.
So if you learn, let's say, with someone who's kolo, do you have to pay him?
No, so I'm talking about a kolo getting paid by the kolo itself.
If he's not paid by the
kolo, then that's the thing. And at least he's entitled to Shkar
Batala. Yeah, let's put it out in a very nice way. Even though it was a tutoring, it was one specific kid. Mm-hmm. He said that you have an obligation to support your family. I have an obligation to educate my kids. Let's make a deal.
How was Alter Rebbe said to a Malamed to Jew's kids? Yeah. Okay. Mace, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. I have a further contradiction to Rav. A Braita says, "Chinoikus leikaren b'chilah b'Shabbos." Children cannot learn something, cannot learn a topic in Chumash b'Pashtos or in Tanakh for the first time on Shabbos. Ela shonin b'rishon, but they're able. They can do the first review. So, meaning, in other words, when you think of it, when you teach a kid a pasuk, you teach it to him for the first time. There'll be a first time when they're reading it out of a Sefer Torah. In those days, they actually learned out of Sefer Torah because they didn't have printed Sfarim. They'd read the pasuk for the first time where they've never read this pasuk before, and then you'd start reviewing. You'd review it enough times, like they do nowadays in schools. So the Braita is saying you're not allowed to have the children learn something new for the first time on Shabbos, but you can have them review it even for the first time, even though the first review, they still don't know it so well yet. But the fact is, the first review already is not as strenuous as the original learning. So, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that you're entitled to be paid for the Pisuk Taimim, for teaching them Torah, well, then we understand why should you not be able to teach them for the first time on Shabbos, because then you're going to have a problem of Schar Shabbos. The Malamed should be entitled to charge for Pesuk Taimim, according to Rabbi Yochanan, but you're not allowed to charge for work done on Shabbos, Schar Shabbos. So therefore, that would be a problem. Mashenkin, you don't get paid for, you don't mainly get paid for the Chazara. So even the first Chazara already, the Malamed is basically getting paid for the first time he teaches the kid Pesuk Taimim, according to Rabbi Yochanan, not really for the reviews. The reviews are just, it's not really the main thing. So fine, therefore we can, according to Rabbi Yochanan, this Braita makes a lot of sense.
What about the
Balkari on Shabbos? We'll get to that soon, right. But according to Rav, if a Malamed is entitled to be paid because he's watching the kids, Amaya and Kerim Meshchilah B'Shabbos, Amaya Shonin B'Rishon. So what would be the difference that you're not allowed to learn a topic, a pasuk, for the first time on Shabbos, but you're allowed to review it even the first time? Either way, you're still watching the kids the same period of time. So what should be the difference? So the Gemara answers back, V'litai Meich knew according to your own Svara, Schar Pisuk B'Shabbos mi Yosur. Why would the Schar of teaching the Torah, why would that be also on Shabbos? Havlahi. It's not you're getting paid separately for Shabbos. It's getting swallowed up together with the rest of the time, meaning you're getting paid, you're not getting paid on a daily basis. The Malamed is not getting paid on a daily basis. The deal with the parents is, let's say, he's getting paid on a monthly or an annual basis or whatever. And in that case, a flat fee, right, for the whole time. And in that case, you are allowed to take schar for what you're doing on Shabbos as well. The Havla, Mishra Shari, Havla is in fact perfectly allowed. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Hasocher Sapoyal Lishmer Satinuk, if somebody hires a worker to watch a child, now, you would think it just means plain old babysitting, but all the Mephoshim over here say, and Rashi also brings where the Gemara also brings this in Bava Metzia, that no, we don't just mean regular babysitting. Apparently they didn't have such a need for babysitting in those days, you know the old expression, it takes a village to raise a child, and in those times everybody lives in a village. Yeah. What kind of babysitting are we talking about? So we've learned before, we've had a few times the concept that for the Parah Aduma, they wanted to have the people who are going to fill up the ashes in order to sprinkle the Kohen Gadol before he makes the next Parah Aduma. They wanted to have children who would never become Tameh. So they would have these special courtyards in Yerushalayim that were built on arches on top of arches, so there's no way Tumah can get through. And they'd have children who are born there and raised there until they're 7 or 8 years old, and then they're taken for a ride down to the Shaloyach. We learned it in Sukkah. We learned it in Sukkah, and we touched on it briefly, you know, in a couple of places since then. So somebody has to watch these kids, make sure they don't become tummy. That's the case we're talking about, that you hire a worker to watch these kids. Or lishmer sapara, or to watch a cow, and again, we're not just talking about any old cow, we mean the parah aduma. Or lishmer sadroyim, or to watch the seeds that have been planted. Now, why do you need somebody to watch the seeds? This is the, no, Kalayim just has to be uprooted. There's no reason to watch them. No, we're talking about the seed, the barley that's planted for the mitzvah of the Omer. You have a field that you're going to be harvesting in order to bring the barley for the Korban Omer. You need somebody to watch it to make sure that somebody doesn't walk off with that with the barley.
How would you
complete
seeds?
No, I'm not talking about the seeds. Zroyim doesn't mean just the seeds that are planted in the ground. It means the produce of the seeds, the actual stalks of grain. Somebody can go and chop it down and then take it.
You need shmira for that. How many fields
did they use? What did they do? I think they harvested, I think, three saw, and then they sifted it again and again until they got out of it the one isodron that they need for the oimer. An isodron is 1/10 of three saw. So they'd get 1/10 of the original amount would become the actual carbon oimer. The other 9/10.
1/3 saw.
Yeah. The tibur brings the carbon omer, but
one quarter for everybody.
Yeah, it's run on the 7-day Pesach for the old Jewish people. Yeah, but anyway, so you'd need there would be some field over there that had barley growing in it that knew Yerushalayim ideally. They'd have to have somebody watch it to make sure somebody doesn't make off with it. It could also be actually, and I think I believe Rashi says this someplace else, but I don't remember for sure. That another possibility is specifically doing Shmita here. There would be. We learned about this way back when in Shkolin, that you could have the, you know, there's going to be, everybody's going to be trying to grab the ownerless produce over there, but you still need, there needs to be barley available for the Omer and wheat available for the Shtei Lechem. So again, you need people, you hire people, the treasury of the Bais Mikdash, the Gizbarim, would hire somebody to watch these and tell people, you know what, these are reserved for the Bais Mikdash, please don't touch them. Whatever it is. So now, if you hire the person on a day-by-day basis, then you don't give him payment for Shabbos. Therefore, if something happens to them on Shabbos, he's not responsible. He's not hired on Shabbos. He's not on the clock on Shabbos. On the other hand, but if he's hired by the week, if he's hired on a daily basis, then he only gets paid for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. He does not get paid for Shabbos. Therefore, on Shabbos, he's a Shem Mechinam. A Shem Mechinam is less responsible. On the other hand, but if he was hired for the entire week, so let's say, you know, a flat fee that you're getting paid seven, you know, including Shabbos. So yeah, even though one of those days is Shabbos, but this is called Havla. You're not specifically paying him for Shabbos as opposed to the other days. You're paying him a flat fee for the entire week.
And if something is taking chance, you don't...
Well, then he is on the clock on Shabbos. That's what we're going to pay.
Not 1/7.
No, what
for the whole thing.
No, then he's responsible to the value of whatever it was that got damaged. Yeah, I don't understand. If he's, for example, watching the Parah Aduma,
right.
If he's not being paid for Shabbos, if he's being paid on a daily basis, right. Then if something happens to the Parah Aduma on Shabbos, then he's not responsible. Right. But if he's getting paid for the entire week, then, regardless of whether something happens on weekdays or on Shabbos, either way, he's a Shema Sacher. A Shema Sacher is responsible for Aveda. So therefore, if something happens, he's going to be responsible. He's going to have to reimburse the owner for the value of the parah. So if he was Schir Shabbos, or Schir Chodesh, if he was hired by the month, Schir Shana, by the year, Schar Shavua, or by the 7 years, Noisim Le Schar Shabbos, then he does get paid Schar Shabbos. Therefore, something happens to them that he would be chayav because he's a shlema sacher. Now, how does this relate to, you asked about Bali Kriya? So in Shulchan Aruch actually talks about the same kind of problem as far as chazonim and Bali Tzkiya, where a chazan is being hired for Shabbos, a Bal Tzkiya is being hired for Rosh Hashanah. So how does that work?
Only on Shabbos.
Oh, right, only for Shabbos, right. couple of different possibilities. One answer is we make an exception for that because it's a matter of a mitzvah. Because you the being a chazan or being a baal peh is a mitzvah. Having said that, it does say the Gemara mentions someplace that somebody who takes money for these einir goyah simin bracha, he won't get a bracha from this money, so he is allowed to take it. But better it would be better if he didn't. But there is the idea that you're allowed to pay them because it's a matter of a mitzvah, and otherwise you're not going to have anybody. Mashenkin over here, actually, what the Ran says. I mean, it's true that the Ran. Well, that's what we're talking about. So you can hire a baal tekeya for Rosh Hashanah. Ideally, he wouldn't take payment, but if he wants payment, you're allowed to pay him. The fact that he won't see a simin bracha from it, that's his problem, not yours. But you're allowed to. It's sad that it's a mitzvah.
Well, it's kind of daven for Yom Tov.
So if he daven the mitzvah, if he's being hired to daven before Yom Tov as well as on Yom Tov, fine, then you're good because then it's havlah. Same thing. I mean, with the baal tekeya also, you could be paying. You could arrange with him that you're paying him not only for the actual blowing on Rosh Hashanah, but also, let's say, for practicing before Rosh Hashanah. Let's say, for you could be paying him to blow on weekdays doing Elul, for example. And that way you do it for Havlah, and that way you're for sure good. Yeah. Tosfos, by the way, points out that when you get down to it, I mean, we know the concept that chafetzecha asur in cheste shemayim mutarin, you're not allowed to do your own business on Shabbos, but you're allowed to do the Eivishter's business. So why should you not be allowed to take schar Shabbos for these things if it's not bad law? And the answer is, very well, the mitzvah, the watching the parah duma or the child or whatever is a mitzvah, the payment is not cheste shemayim, do it for free. Nobody's stopping you. Okay. Anyway, So therefore, the Gemara's point is that even if you say that the teacher is getting paid for pisuk taimim, there's no reason necessarily to distinguish between Shabbos and weekdays. To say that you can't learn a pasuk for the first time on Shabbos, but you can learn it during, but you can review it. Because either way, according to Rav, for sure there shouldn't be a difference, because the question was, how is it a difference according to Rav? You're doing the same babysitting on Shabbos as you would on weekdays. But according to Rav Yechon, and also the Chora, since it's Bahav Law, since the teacher is getting paid a flat fee for the whole week or the whole month or year or what have you, then he should be able to get paid for Shabbos anyway. Ella, no. Gabi Shabbos Hainu Taimah De'en Koren Batchila. No. Rather, the reason why you don't read a why you don't have the children learn a pasuk for the first time on Shabbos, Mishum Di'ifnu Avahosan Di'inuki L'mitzvah Sid Shabbos. Because the fathers of the children are turning to the mitzvahs of Shabbos. Namely, what does that mean? There's a few different explanations. One of them, the Ran gives one explanation that Shabbos is a time when fathers take time to play to play and to spend time with their kids. So if the kids are going to be learning a new pasuk for the first time on Shabbos, the fathers are going to figure, you know what? Then I don't want to take him out of school in order to spend Shabbos afternoon with him. He's going to lose out. He's going to miss out learning the pasuk for the first time, and then he's going to fall behind his class. Mashenkin, if you do only review, if you know that the Malam is only going to be doing review on Shabbos, okay, at least he learned it the first time before Shabbos. He misses one review, it's not so terrible.
What does that mean, Yahusha Levitulam?
Yahusha Levitulam, they're going to be concerned about taking their kids out of school.
In order to do what?
Like this, Shabbos is the time when the fathers would be spending time with their kids, because during the week they're working and they don't have time for it. You want to give the fathers the opportunity to be able to spend time with their kids. Don't have the kids in learning something for the first time in cheder, and then the fathers are going to figure, you know what? I don't want it to fall behind this class, so I'm not going to take them out. And then when are they going to have any time with their kids?
I don't think they had a Sunday.
No, they didn't have Sundays. No.
The only day off. Was
the only day off was Shabbos, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of different other possibilities. What this means over here. The Shitim Kvetis brings one possibility also, that the mitzvah can be Meloshin Sebes, Meloshin joining together, not the mitzvah to Shabbos for the mitzvah on Shabbos, but rather like for joining. It's a similar idea to what the Ran is saying, but not that the idea is the mitzvah of Shabbos to spend time with their kids, but rather that it is just to be with them on Shabbos. Just a different lashon of what the mitzvah means. Tosfos gives another possibility that it means that like this: if the kids are learning a pasuk for the first time on Shabbos, it's going to take longer. It's going to be a longer class time. Therefore, the Shabbos meal is going to be delayed. That's the mitzvah of Shabbos, is to have Chinuch Shabbos, is to have a nice Shabbos meal. And if they're learning for a long time for a new pasuk, then it's going to be delayed. Mashenkin, if it's just review, then it's not. It doesn't take as long. It doesn't take as long, and therefore doesn't delay things.
What about Shabringan? It also delays.
Shabringan, they're usually after, or usually after the meal, but okay.
Yeah. After the meal.
Okay, it depends, you know.
Yeah. I think it's for bringing up the
meal. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the
Kiddush. Fine. So, the Kiddush is also a Shabbos Sode, right? I mean, you know. The Ibai Sema, or another possibility, why should the kid not learn something, a new topic for the first time on Shabbos? Mishum de b'Shabbos ha'ochel and b'shasid, because on Shabbos they eat and drink extra, v'yakir alei in alma, and therefore they feel much heavier. They like their stomach is fuller, and therefore they feel like more sluggish and not really able to learn as well. This is like what Shmuel says. The Amash Shmuel, Shinui, we learned this at the end of the Kibbutz. Shinui Vest, Chilas 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 Me'ayim. A change in habit is the beginning of stomach aches. So like this, when a person is used to eating very plain food the rest of the week, and all of a sudden they have extra food and rich food on Shabbos, then give them an upset stomach. Therefore, they can't learn as well. This is why what?
That's what they said. This is the Arama.
Yeah, right. Actually, we learned at the end of Ksubas that on the contrary, we said, Kol Yimei Ani Roim, because he eats extra on Shabbos, and he's Dafka, the one who has the Shinui Vest. But there is a vote, they say, this is one reason why there's an Indian to taste from the Shabbos food on Erev Shabbos. That way, eating it on Shabbos is not a Shinui Vest. You get used to it. Yeah. Incidentally, by the way, the Shittim Kubetzes has a bit of a funny expression about this. He says everybody's earning Shabbos is basically it should be different than what they do the rest of the week. Balabatim, who don't usually have much time to learn during the week, should take the time to learn on Shabbos. Talmid Chachamim, who spend all their time learning during the week, should take a nap on Shabbos. And actually, there's also brought that Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings in a siddur. Rabbi Yaakov Emden actually brings in a siddur that you shouldn't be learning too much in depth on Shabbos, and he goes so far as to say that if you're learning very much in depth on Shabbos, it's actually kind of a chilul Shabbos, because you're taking away from the oinig of Shabbos. Many other achronim disagree with him on that, but Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes this in his siddur. Yes, you're supposed to learn on Shabbos, but not the fartifsek in it. Yeah.
That's
true.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, now let's get back to the Gemara over here. Okay. Fine. So far we've explained what this braisa means. Why should the kid? There's a logical reason why the kids shouldn't be learning a new pasuk for the first time on Shabbos. So therefore, again, the braisa is no proof one way or the other between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. You could explain it like Rav, that the reason that you could explain it like either one of them, that the reason why they shouldn't learn something new on Shabbos has nothing to do with whether the Malamed is getting paid or not. It's either because the fathers should have time to spend with their kids, or because the kids themselves are going to feel too loggy and not really up. So yeah. Now, Omando Amaschah piss of time in my time of Amaschah Shimur. Fine. We have the Machalikas Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is saying that the Malamed is entitled to be, to, when he's teaching Mikra, he's entitled to be paid for piss of time, for teaching Mikra. My time of Amaschah Shimur. Well, why doesn't he say that the Malamed is entitled to be paid for watching the kids? The answer is Kasava, because he figures Bonais Mika Bayan Shimur. What about when you're teaching girls? They don't need to be watched as much, because girls are not quite as antsy as boys. They tend to stay in more. So therefore, there's less of a chance that they're going to go run out and get wild and do stupid things. So you don't have to watch them as much. So actually, our Mishnah had talked about Malamadu as Bonavet Benoisev Mikra. There are Girsois that don't have the word Benoisev. But over here, the Gemara seems to be implying that if you're teaching the sons, then you're also teaching the daughters. So yes, how does that fit with the whole concept of also the Adam Tree Lamanas Bita Torah? So actually, it's pretty controversial. And one answer is Yutaka. We'll learn a few months from now in Sota about Zashem that there are certain problems in halacha with teaching girls Torah Shabbat Peh. We'll learn then. We'll get to all the ins and outs of it then, Mez Hashem. But Teresh B'Chav, there's no particular mitzvah for them to learn. They don't have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah like boys do. But there's no great objection to teaching them either. It's not considered Kilo Malam the Tiflis. So therefore, yes, you can have a person who wants his daughters to be taught Chumash. And therefore, now the Braisa is not the Braisa. The Mishnah when it talks about teaching children. L'chura, even if we're not Gerdes, B'noisev, in the Mishnah, the Pashtus, it includes girls as well, especially because, not necessarily, also are we talking, just like before we talked about an Amud Aleph, that not necessarily is it only kids who you're teaching, it may well be adults also, well with adults. Throughout this Masechta, whenever we're talking about somebody making a Neder, it could equally well be a man or a woman. A woman is just as high of a Nedarim as a man, except that her husband can cancel them. So therefore, you could have the same situation, where you have a woman who made a neder not to have an anah from somebody, and yet the implication is that you can teach her mikra. Same idea, then. Women or girls, just like men don't need shimur, neither do girls, and neither do adult women. With all that, the Ran with a different girsa, that the Gemara doesn't say, bonus mi kabayin shimur, but gadol mi bay shimur. That, going back to, on Amud Aleph, we argued that maybe the Mishnah is talking about a cotton, but maybe Rabbi Yechanan doesn't really like that idea that you're going to have to say that the Mishnah is missing words, that it's talking first about a cotton and then about a gadol. Preferable to say that the Mishnah is talking about a gadol. And if a gadol, there's no shimur involved, there's no babysitting involved, therefore Rabbi Yechanan can't say that that's the reason that the Malamed is entitled to be taught, is entitled to be paid. Okay, Lamando Amaschav Shimu my time Amaschav Kitzur Kaimim. Fine, let's go the other way around. According to Rav, that he mentioned that the Melamed is being paid for watching the kids. Why doesn't he also mention that he's entitled to be paid for Pisuk Kaimim, for teaching Torah? The answer is Kasaver Pisuk Kaimim Daraisahu, because as a matter of fact, Rav holds that Pisuk Kaimim is Daraisa. Just like we established on Amud Aleph that you're not allowed to charge for Torah Shabbat, and you're not really allowed to charge for Torah B'Chsav either. Just we mentioned Pisuk Taimim maybe is an exception. Well, according to Rav, Pisuk Taimim is Daraisa, just as much Daraisa as the actual written text of Chumash and Tanakh.
Why is that?
Because that's according to the various possibilities we mentioned. Either again, if the timing were also given Lamosha Misinai, like the Zohar says, well then there's no question. Of course, then it's on the same level of Chumash. Even if you say that Ezra was Masakin them or whatever, still there'd be the idea that they're a basic part of learning Chumash. So just as much as you can't charge for learning Chumash, therefore, according to Rav, you shouldn't be able to charge for piece of timing either. The Amr of Ikabaov in Amr of Hanan Amr Rab, my dichtiv, what does it mean? The Pasuk describes in Nehemiah, describes how they gather together all the people on Rosh Hashanah to read to them from the Torah. Vayikru b'sefer Torah Selikim, they read from the sefer of the Torah of the Eibishter, Meforosh, explained, the same seichel, and giving the understanding. Vayavinu b'mikra, and giving the sense, really, maybe might be a better translation of seichel, giving the sense. Vayavinu b'mikra, and they understood in the psukim. So what does all this mean? Vayikru b'sefer Torah Selikim z'mikra. This means reading the actual words of Chumash. Meforosh, the Targum. The word meforosh means that they also translated it into Aramaic. The Targum explains the psukim, so that meforosh means the Targum. In those days, not all the people spoke Lashon Kodesh. Many of them spoke Aramaic or various other languages. The Rambam, for example, mentioned at the beginning of Hilchos Tefillah, this is why the Chachamim at that time, this is the time of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, why they had to be Mesakin, a standard text of Davening, the standard text of Shemoneh Esrei that we have, because in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, people all spoke Lashon Kodesh, they were able to express themselves clearly. In the time of the second Beis Mikdash already, they weren't. They were speaking over a whole polyglot mix of languages, and therefore the Chachamim said we've got to set up one standard thing for everybody to be able to say. So then you did the Targum. Yes, so he would say Pasuk by Pasuk. The Balkoda, the Oila, whatever.
I'm talking about the Greek, so I'm talking about like the Rebbe was aware.
Oh, that's a different. Right. Right. But that's right. That. Yeah, but there, I mean, there the Meturgeman doesn't just translate it. He amplifies it and expands it and explains it and says it out loud. Yeah.
And it could be in Aramaic, right?
Yeah, Pashas, I mean, that was the language they spoke. Yeah. There's a reason why the Gemara is written in Aramaic. Yeah. Incidentally, by the way, well, okay, let's finish the Braita and then we'll talk about this. The same Seichel Eilah Psukim, when it says that they gave the sense of it, this means the Psukim, the division between one Pasuk and the next, which allows you to divide the what you're hearing into sensible units. Each Pasuk is a unit of its own.
In English, it's called phraseology.
Okay. Vayavinu b'mikra is a pisuk timing. When it says that they made them be able to understand the mikra, this means the division of timing. Because again, one function of the timing of the Torah is that it divides the pasuk into smaller syntactic units. So you see what word goes with which one, and which word is separated from which one, and how the words in the pasuk fit together, etc. The amri lo elo amasoda. So another opinion says that it is the details of the masoda. Mole and Chaser, for example, some of the examples that the Gemara is going to be talking about in a minute. Incidentally, by the way, there are details in the Masorah, for example, which words are Mole and which words are Chaser. Or, as we're going to talk about now, details of Nekudas and other such things that we'll get to in a second now, as the Gemara is going to discuss. Incidentally, by the way, there are a lot of various Mefarshim talk about based on this Braisa. It seems that everything in this Braisa, if we're bringing this Braisa as a proof for the idea that Pesach time is Daraisa, then the implication is that everything in this Braisa is Daraisa. Does that include the Targum as well? There's a few different ways of looking at it. The Gemara in Megillah, in fact, mentioned that the famous Targum that we have is Targum Unkelus. Unkelus lived around the time of the Chorin Bais Sheni, or a little bit after it. The Gemara mentions over there that he got his Targum from, it goes back to Chagas Chayyan Malachi, or at the beginning of the second Mishnah, just that the Gemara says, Shachum B'chaz Rubi Yistum, it was forgotten, and then Uncle was reinstated it.
How can he explain it was forgotten?
So I once saw an explanation. What does it mean? It was forgotten. If you ever compare, if you ever take a Chumash Mekroes Gedolos and compare Targum Unkelus to Targum Yonasan, you'll see Targum Yonasan is a lot more expansive. It adds a lot more drashas and whatnot to the psukim. So it could be something along the lines of that was originally a fairly straightforward Targum, like Targum Unkelus that came from Chagas Chaya Malachi. Eventually, over the hundreds of years, as people are saying in Shul, each Meturgeman added his own little knesh and it and whatever until the original was forgotten and Uncle was went and cleaned it up and then got it back to what it was originally. Anyway, based on our Gemara over here, it may be that the original Targum actually goes back to Halacha Moshe Mistinai. So one way of looking at it is it means the actual Aramaic. That's fine, you know, the Eibishter gave the Torah in 70 languages, so Aramaic is one of them. Or the other possibility is it doesn't necessarily mean the actual language, but it means the sense of it. There are places, even Unkelus, even though he's much more literal, there are places where he translates the Pasuk differently than the literal. There's places where the Pasuk says a literal expression like Hashem's eyes or Hashem did such and such. Targum Unkelus uses a circumlocution for it, like it was seen before Hashem or whatever. There's places like in the Brachos of Yaakov and the Brachos of Moshe where he expands a little bit with Medrash, so it would be that kind of thing that goes back to the Halacha Moshe Mishnah. And then Unkelus, and then Chagas Chayon Alachim, and later Unkelus put it into Aramaic. Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, what are some examples of Masorah? Mikra Sofrim, the way that the Sofrim read the words, the Itur Sofrim, and the way that the Sofrim decorate the words, the Kalyan V'lok Sivan, and the places where there's a word that's read, as the word that's read in Tanakh, even though it's not written, Oksivan V'lok Kalyan, or the other way around, it's written but not read. All of these are Halach L'Moshe Mishinai. What is Mikra Sofrim? An example of Mikra Sofrim is Eretz Shemayim Mitzrayim. A vast number of explanations. Every Mefarish has their own explanation of what it means. The Ran says that it means like this. The fact that we know you have the word Eretz usually when it's in the middle of the Pasuk, but at the end of the Pasuk, we're in a Snachta, instead of Oretz. Same thing, Shemayim becomes Shomoyim, Mitzrayim becomes Mitzrayim. That's the thing. It's all part of Halacha Moshe Mishinai that those details are important. That there are those variations in certain places.
What do they mean?
It means that it signals that it's a major break in the pasuk. That's a major it has to do with when you have a major break in meaning in a pasuk, then the word eretz changes to aretz and so forth.
Don't you talk about the aleph for eretz?
That's another way. So he says that Eretz, or that he says that he distinguishes right between Eretz versus Shemayim and Mitzrayim. He says like this: Eretz is the fact that sometimes it says that sometimes it's Eretz and sometimes it says Oretz. Shemayim and Mitzrayim is the vote that even though there's no, how would you know to read them Shemayim Mitzrayim? If you just looked at the letters in the Sefer Torah, you would think to read Shomim or Mitzrim. The Torah Shabbat teaches us that you're supposed to read them as though there was an Aleph in the middle of there. Shemayim, Mitzrayim.
But Aretz and Eretz, I've always wondered, what's the...
So that's what I'm saying. It's not a difference in meaning, but it's a difference in pronunciation. And the point is that difference in pronunciation is important. It's Mikra Sofrim. By the way, why are we calling them Mikra Sofrim? I mean, it's not Sofrim didn't invent them. So one explanation is that it means that the regular people wouldn't have realized, the Hamonam wouldn't have realized these differences. The regular people would just say Eretz throughout. The Sofrim are the ones who are careful about this. The Talmud Chachamim are careful to say Eretz versus Oretz, etc. They're the ones who taught us that they're the ones who taught us that Chilah the Eibishter gave it to Moshe this way.
But we don't know the meaning.
There's no difference in meaning between Eretz and Oretz. One is in the middle of a pasuk, one's at the end of a pasuk. That's just how the grammar of Lashon Kodesh works. Actually, Rav Moshe Feinstein has in a tshuva where he discusses this Gemara. He says what the Gemara may mean is maybe before Matan Torah there was no such difference. Maybe before Matan Torah, the language of Lashon Kodesh, as they spoke it before Matan Torah, didn't have this thing. You would always say Eretz, regardless whether it's in the middle of a pasuk or the end of a pasuk. Halacha Moshe Feinstein teaches us that you need to make that distinction based on where in the sentence it is.
Oretz
is at the end. Yeah.
What, the same thing
to the Aleph? No, so that would be, he's talking only about Eretz. No, but according to him, it would be Eretz, Oretz, Shemayim, Shemoyim, and Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim. The same, those examples. Yeah. Anyway, Rashi gives a different explanation over here, that the very word Eretz itself, how would you know to pronounce it with two segels, except for Halacha Moshe Mitzinai? In order, if otherwise, you would have to have Yud's written in there, or Yud sort of represents a segel when you're writing in Ksiv Moli. When you don't have that, then you wouldn't have any way of knowing. So that's Mikra Sofrim. Itur Sofrim, the declarations of Sofrim, means, for example, when the pasuk says Achar Tavodu, Achar Telech, Achar Teosef, or Kidmu Sharam Achar Nognim, or Tzidkoscha Kahar Rekel. Now, in what way is this Itur Sofrim? So again, there's a lot of different explanations. The Ran explains that in the first four, when it's all with Achar, what does Achar mean? It means afterwards. The Pasuk didn't have to say afterwards. For example, what's Achar Tavodu? Avraham Avinu says to the Malachim, come and Vesadu Pasuk, come eat a bite of bread, Achar Tavodu, and after that you'll pass on, and you'll go wherever you're going. They don't have to say Achar. Vesadu Libchem, Vitavodu, and then you'll go. The Achar is it's stylistic, therefore. It's a fancy way of talking. That's called Itur Sofrim. And again, the idea would be not that the Sofrim invented them, Chas v'Shalom, it's all part of Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, but rather either that the Torah itself sort of decorates the language like Sofrim do when they write something, that they use nicer embellishments, or it means that the regular people wouldn't have realized these kinds of details. Regular people might have thought the pasuk just says v'sadu libchem v'tavodu, and the Sofrim explain that no, you definitely have to write achar. So it's all Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Another explanation. Not that we don't understand. Achar Tavodu means afterwards you'll pass on. But according to the Ran, the point is it's not. We don't darshin anything from the word achar, for example. It's just it's there stylistically. Yeah. Another possibility. Rashi says, for example, that with achar Tavodu, it could have said Tavodu achar. You'll pass away afterwards. Achar Tavodu, though, is a nicer stylistic way of saying it. Again, there's various other explanations, one of them being the Aruch brings a possibility that Itur, the Rosh also brings it over here, that Itur doesn't mean decoration, but rather it means taking away. Namely, in many of these psukim, people might have thought there should be a vav there. The Sadu Libchem, Ve'achar Tavodu. Ve'achar Teosef, etc. So the Sofrim removed that in the sense that they told us, don't think there should be that vav there. You should know that vav is really supposed to be missing there. Don't try to add it in. Don't try to add it back in. As far as Tzidkoscha Harerekel, again, there's various explanations. The Ran says that the pasuk could have said Tzidkoscha Harerekel without the kof. Just like the pasuk continues Mishpatecha Tohoim Rabba without a kof adinyon. So also Tzidkoscha could have been Tzidkoscha Harerekel. Again, the kof is a fancier way of saying it. It means that they're exactly that, but the Malachim, who are like great mountains, even they need the kindness of Hashem. So that could have been what the Pasuk meant, but Tzitzkos, Keharei Keil, makes it a nicer expression. Then the Rambam, the Ran gives another explanation about this Itur Sofrim business. He says that with each of these achars, there's a trop that separates it from the next word. So you don't think, for example, that, let's say with achar tavoru, don't think it means you should first go away and then you'll come back and eat. No, achar, afterwards, tavoru, you can first eat, and then achar, afterwards, tavoru, you can pass on, etc. Okay, I think let's break over here, and we'll continue with these tomorrow.